up every fact she knew about him, stepped back, and studied the big picture, seeking logic. The world around her vanished, leaving what she loved best, a mystery, an unexplained event, and her fierce, consuming desire to riddle it out. Everything in the universe made sense, if one gathered enough information and examined it properly. Up went the impaired state of Cruz's prison, the closed doors of the cavern, the cuff she'd worn for months without it ever closing, the apparent release of Cruz by the Shisa Du, or had it caught him wandering the grounds already free? The cuff abruptly closing, as if responding to a signal it had previously been unable to receive. The legend that in addition to affording a protective shield, the cuff of Cruz had served as the concubine's way of summoning the Unseelie King. For that reason alone, Jada had deemed it worth stealing from Cruz's arm, but it never worked. Suspicion took the cohesive form of a valid premise. "You've got to be kidding me," she murmured.
"What?"
Barons demanded. She opened her eyes. "We were talking about him right before he appeared. When I took the cuff from his arm, he was still imprisoned, his power contained. A short time ago, before he was turned into a blob, he must have been free for at least a brief time. Long enough that the cuff might have responded to its creator and established a bond between them. Trusting that Barons was correct and she wasn't summoning another version of what Mac had become, Jada tested it. Cruz." The prince was back again, standing in the middle of them, swaying slightly, his hand at his throat, looking shocked and startled before his expression turned thunderous. He vanished. "Cruz," she said again. He was back again, coldly furious.
"You will stop doing that, human, and you will give it back to me. It was never meant for you."
He stalked toward her, hand outstretched, but froze when she slid the sword from behind her back. She scrutinized him closely, but detected none of the enormous malevolence she expected from the Shisa Du. "Your deceit doesn't work on me anymore." She'd felt the intense pressure of the illusion he'd just tried to force on her, to convince her that he'd taken her sword and she was defenseless against him. "I'll only bring you back, each time. We can do this all day."
"Give me my cuff or die, human. Explain."
Barons fired at Jada. She smirked. "It seems I've got the all-powerful Cruz on a leash."
"That same leash tethers you, human."
Cruz purred and vanished. "Bloody hell," was all Jada managed to get out before she, too, was gone. 9. I do what the good girls don't. Jo offers me a smile when she sees me approaching. "That'd be great, Mac," she says, accepting my offer of aid. "We're trying to collect what supplies remain and move them below." "Isn't that water over there?" I say, nodding toward the half-collapsed pantry. "Looks like a dozen or more jugs." Her smile brightens. "We need to get that out to the women. Most of them haven't had anything to eat or drink since last night." She moves to the collapsed structure and begins removing the jugs. She doesn't know she's handling poison. Death. Idiot. She doesn't understand that nothing can be taken for granted in this world. Would undoubtedly refuse to believe we even exist. Those of us that see through others as if they're cardboard cutouts with their simplistic needs scribbled in Sharpie on their flat, one-dimensional faces. I need nothing. I am desire. Lust. Greed. "How are things with lore?" I toy with her as I move near. She begins to hand me water jugs, one after the next. I sweep a dusting of ice from a long flat stone, place it there, then three more in quick succession beside it. I open one, and while her back is turned, pretend to take a drink. "Oh, that's good. Here, have some." I offer her the jug and watch as she takes a long, deep swallow. "Ew, that's weird," she says, wiping her mouth. It tasted sweet. Probably some of the jugs Jada put sweetener in. I lie. She told me sugar water fuels her freeze frame better than plain. So, what's up with Lore? I prod. I want to see her happy, excited about the life she's never going to have when I take it from her. She laughs. Oh, God, Mac, I never would have guessed that man was so complicated. He's smart, like super freaky smart. Who'd have thought? He's trying to help me create a filing system for my memory. Do you care about him? She takes another drink, grimaces, and hands me the jug back. I haven't had time to think about it, she demurs. We're all too busy just trying to survive. But she does. It's there in the soft glow in her eyes. She's thinking that she has someone she can count on, someone strong who makes her feel good and alive, as if life holds endless opportunity for adventure and... what a stupid fucking delusion humans erect and cling to. Romance. She's happy. She put on makeup this morning, took care with her hair. She's hoping to see him today. She will never see him again. I am the last thing she'll see, the face of her god as I punish her for the unforgivable sin of failing to protect her kingdom. But this time, I'll take it slow. Savor every succulent nuance of killing, destroying, breaking, defiling. Lust blazes white hot in my body, between my legs, and I nearly stagger from the intensity of it. Destroying makes me want to fuck, but this woman lacks the parts I desire. I stare at her through the dim light, assessing, fixing my gaze on her neck. It looks tender and full of blood. Perhaps blood will strengthen me. Come, I suggest softly. Let's secure these below, then we'll take a few jugs to the she-seers. I collect two of them, and she follows me, like a fucking idiotic puppy who thinks the world is a good, safe place to explore, full of happy people, with hands outstretched in kindness, bearing gifts of food and toys to the demolished entry to the underground city. As I mount the rubble at the top of the stairs, I freeze. Cruz's body is gone. How could Cruz's body be gone? I momentarily blank, unable to divine a possibility that encompasses this anomaly. No one else has been here. I would have heard someone creep up the stairs and drag him back down. I would have picked up some small sound if he'd somehow managed to escape the rune's impossible and slipped off. I can't explain this. Something has transpired for which I am unable to account. That means I have an enemy. A clever, clever one. Someone tampers with my work. Who is interfering with my plans and how? I consider attempting to employ the same temporal spell Michaela used. See if it would work on me to shuttle me back a few minutes in time, where I might warn my other self as I top the stairs to watch for an enemy and identify it. But it's possible duplicate versions of myself could split my power, and if one version of me was destroyed in the temporal conflict, so too would be whatever power it possessed. I remember too well what happened when I amputated myself from the corporeal version of the book. I'd had to leave parts of myself behind. Important parts. They'd served as a distraction. Kept all eyes on the book, not Isla, but I'd never stopped rueing the loss. Some of my more powerful spells had been sacrificed that day. Limits. Limits everywhere. Fury floods my veins. My body trembles with it, weak thing that it is. Not only don't I have the spear, now one of my cocoons is missing. My meticulously crafted, swift surgical strike is being undermined at every turn. Incensed, I whirl on Joe, all subtlety and plans for leisure gone, and grab her by the shoulders. I need an outlet. Now. What's wrong, Mac? she gasps, startled, staring at me wide-eyed, doe eyes, dumb, trusting eyes. I grip her tightly with one hand, digging my fingers into her back, my thumb into the soft flesh beneath her collarbone, and slam her in the face with a fist, using every ounce of my unseely, flesh-enhanced strength. With the first blow, Jo's nose explodes. Her right jaw fractures, and her eyes roll back into her head. She staggers for footing.
My God, Mac, what?
With the second blow, I unhinge both jaws completely, and she doesn't speak again. Choking on blood, strangled screams gurgle from her throat. I punch her again, and again, and again, shattering the bones of her eye sockets, her brow, blinding her, splintering her skull, incensed that I have an enemy I know nothing about. A clever, clever enemy who has stolen something that is mine. Two things now have been unfairly thieved from me. Terrified, broken mewling sounds leak from the broken, bloodied hole of Joe's face. She was too wounded by my first blow to mount a defense. I release my hold on her, and she melts to the ground, trying with the vestiges of her dying will to curl into a protective ball. But there's no protection for me. I am ceaseless, relentless, hungry as a tsunami. My will is stronger, my aim unencumbered, my desires greater. I always win. I kick her hard, again and again, splintering ribs, exploding organs. I fall on her and punch her head until brains glisten wetly in her bloodied hair. Then I tear into the side of her neck with my teeth and begin to eat. 10. The Dogs of War. Jada. She raised a hand to shield her eyes against the glare of sunlight reflected off a mirror of white sand. She stood on a wide, sunny beach beneath a cloudless, dazzling blue sky. Palm trees rustled in a tropical breeze, and azure waves lapped at a sandy shore. Brightly colored hammocks swayed between trees. Paradise. Not. She squinted at the unseely prince standing a dozen pieces away. He'd transformed himself with glamour, and was now the seely prince Vlaine. She suspected he donned a familiar form to conceal the mutilation of his wings, unwilling to let others see him in a weakened condition. His current incarnation was that of an exquisitely beautiful, deadly erotic fae of the royal line, capable of reducing a woman to a state of mindless sexual need. She focused her she-seer gifts and peeled back the glamour, revealing his darker form. Vlaine was tall, but Cruz was a giant, well over 7 feet tall, more densely muscled, his face less classic, the lines sharper, more savage, chiseled by an angry, defiant god. Kaleidoscopic tattoos slithered beneath his dusky skin. In both forms, he wore a flowing, iridescent robe that shimmered in the brilliant sun, more blinding than the reflective sand. His face was drawn with pain, his eyes half closed. He was far more taxed by the Shisadu's assault than he wanted her to know. In either incarnation, weak or strong, he was still a death-by-sex fae. Yet she wasn't feeling that will-destroying desire she'd felt too many times in the past. Nor was she sensing the twisted psychopathic presence of the Shisadu. She let his true form recede from her she-seer vision, and refocused on the golden illusion.
"Give me the cuff, she-seer,"
Cruz snarled.
"Or the next world I take you to will not be so hospitable. You will die there."
She rested the hand on the hilt of her sword. "As will you."
"You will never get that close to me."
"Try me." Jada accessed the slipstream and reappeared directly in front of him, the tip of her blade beneath his chin. He vanished. "Cruz," she said, and he reappeared a half a dozen feet away, scowling. He backed up and they stood measuring each other across 3 meters of powdery sand. She assessed the situation quickly. Here before her stood the most ancient of the Unseelie princes, who possessed enormous knowledge and power, and had proven himself a brilliant strategist, patient, cunning, controlled. The Shisadu was their primary enemy. They were each other's secondary enemy. The enemy of her primary enemy was her friend. I'd call this an impasse. Are you ready to negotiate?
I do not negotiate with humans.
A human just hacked off your wings and sealed you in a cocoon from which you would never have escaped. A human that's far more powerful than you, and clearly doesn't like you. When she learns you've been freed, do you think she'll just forget about you?
Royals regenerate, and that was no human. Your precious Michaela is gone. What remains will never be human again.
Mac wasn't gone. Barons had felt her. That was enough for Jada. So long as I wear the cuff, we're going to be closer than either of us like, and I have the weapon that can terminate your immortal existence.
I am a weapon that can terminate your mortal existence.
Like I said, impasse. Bottom line, we can kill each other, or work together against our common enemy. Negotiate. What do you want? I have my list ready.
I want my cuff back.
Not on the table. Snarling, Cruz lunged but swiftly checked himself. I've got the advantage. Accept that and quit wasting my time. Mac is a problem for both of us. If you have knowledge from the book, you may know something we can use to get her back.
There is no getting her back from that. That was not Michaela. Nor was it the book. At least not the one I touched. That was...
What? Jada demanded.
A sense of superiority that exceeds even mine. And I would not have believed that possible. It felt contempt for me. To the book, I was as foul an aberration as a human. It is depravity, viciousness, sadism, and hunger for absolute dominance. Fey, but unlike any I have ever encountered. It changed.
And we're going to change it back, Jada said evenly. If it takes you again, and I suspect it will, we won't free you next time. We'll leave you like that. You need us. If I were you, I'd make us need you for something. She paused a moment, then probed. This cuff protects the wearer from many things, unseelie and otherwise. That includes you, doesn't it? She'd been able to meet his gaze, as both Fellaine and Cruz, without her eyes bleeding, and seriously doubted he was willingly muting himself. The sudden flash of ire in his iridescent gaze was all the answer she needed. She smiled faintly. You couldn't make it work against the other princes without also protecting the wearer against yourself.
I may not be able to harm you, but I can sift you to a fire world, Shisir.
Where you'll die too. I'm fast enough to take you out as I go. I want the knowledge you took from the Shisadu. I want you to tell me everything.
I want Michaela dead. She could be killed in her current form.
That's not on the table either.
Then we have nothing to negotiate.
He sifted out. Cruz, she murmured, and he was instantly back, face taut with rage. Abruptly, she was in Arctic wasteland, with a bone-chilling wind knifing through her. Her leather jacket froze solid and crackled when she slid up into the slipstream. Vibrating, moving in that higher dimension, she was no longer quite so cold. And the tip of her sword was at Cruz's heart. He flashed her through a dizzying array of hostile landscapes, testing how quickly she could get to him. She waited for him to tire. He would never take her to a fire world that would force her hand. He was too in love with his own immortal existence to invite death. At last, they were back on the beach. Coolly, she peeled open a protein bar and ate it slowly, despite the desire to wolf it down in two bites to compensate for the energy she'd just expended. She was pleased to see that beneath his glamour, he too was suffering from the exertion, far paler than before.
My, my, how you have changed, little girl,
he mocked.
I recall you, human. Still brash, not so gangly.
His eyes narrowed to slits of glittering fire.
Not gangly at all.
You've changed as well. In her past encounters with Blaine, the prince had always been flirtatious, yet solicitous, well-spoken, yet feigned ignorance of many human ways. With Cruz, all pretenses were gone. Here was the brilliant, dark prince who'd plotted and planned for eons, icy, focused, ruthless. Blaine was a seducer. Cruz, a conqueror.
I want the book rendered inert. I want protection until it is.
Accepted. You will wear a glamour that shields humans from your sexual thrall until the goals we agree to pursue are achieved. He inclined his head.
As you will. I rule the Fae Court, as of this moment.
You'll have to confirm with Barons. I'm not opposed to it, if you remove them from our planet immediately.
This is our planet, and here we will remain.
She'd expected the rebuff. It was one of her planned concessions. I want your full assistance rebuilding the walls between our worlds. His eyes shimmered with sudden interest.
I will aid you in reclaiming the Song of Making.
From a distance, and with only superficial knowledge of it, she stipulated. This would be an ongoing war, in which keeping the enemy close was the only way to win it. He laughed, and the sound was a symphony of dark crystals chiming.
Not possible, and you know it. You cannot invite me in, yet bar the door. Working together entails risks for all of us, Shisir.
You'll cooperate fully with the needs we have on a daily basis. Sifting? Helping us complete tasks we deem necessary. That means no wasting time with ego or arguing. He said disdainfully.
Demand the same of Barons.
I won't have to. Time isn't one of our luxuries, and he knows that.
You will return my cuff to me when our common goals have been met.
In exchange for a final service.
What service?
A small thing that will cost you nothing. Then I'll return it. His head swiveled in an entirely inhuman way, and his eyes cooled to iridescent ice.
For all of this, I have only your word.
Ditto, she said.
As of this moment, I am my race's king, and all will recognize me as such. My rule is undisputed. Even your bastard Highlander prince will pledge his fealty to me. Barons and his kind will acknowledge my reign and kneel before me.
She snorted. I have serious doubts about the fealty and kneeling parts. As of this moment, you'll order your race to stop killing humans.
Not on the table. My brethren were locked away with nothing for too long. I would not subject them to starvation again. The status quo remains as it is. Nothing changes with the exception of us working toward the common goals of destroying the Shisadu.
Containing it and saving Mac.
And restoring the song to my race.
Her hand tightened on the hilt of her sword. His gaze moved between her eyes and hand, and he sneered.
When our goals are met, my race will stop killing humans on your planet. But no sooner.
She knew why. Because with the song, you could go anywhere, conquer any world.
Restored to our former glory, we will find a more hospitable place.
You mean a world easier to victimize?
We are not monsters. Had my brethren not been imprisoned for eons, their needs would not be so great. Who can say? Perhaps they would have become like the Fairy Court, in appearance and temperament.
And that's such an improvement, Jada mocked. He bristled, and she could almost hear the rustling of enormous, non-existent wings.
You will treat me and my race with respect.
We'll treat you and your race precisely as you treat ours. It was the way of the world. Leaders pulling together for a tenuous peace, while their factions continued to war. Agreed?
Until our aim is achieved, and not one moment more, we are agreed. If you wish to continue an association at that point, it will be subject to new stipulations.
Fair enough. Return us to the Abbey.
As you wish,
he said, with frost-filled, dangerous eyes. Back at the Abbey, Jada apprised Barons, Christian, and Fade of the agreement she'd struck with Cruz, stressing the necessity of working together quickly and without contention. You can kill each other when this is over, but until that time, we're allies who've shelved animosity in the interest of rescuing Mac and fixing the black holes. If any of you have a problem with that, leave. No one moved. She turned to Barons. I know the bookstore is heavily warded. Can Ashisa do enter it?
On its own, no. Rowena carried it in when she was possessed by it. I'd not warded the store against the old woman. Mac's ability to enter remains to be seen.
Speculate.
The old bitch was human, possessed by a book.
That's exactly what Mac is, Jada pointed out.
I felt her and disagree.
What did you feel? She wished she had his atavistic senses.
Irrelevant. Move on.
It's not ir... She began hotly, but terminated it swiftly. Now was not the time. She glanced at Cruz. Begin sifting the injured she-seers to the alley behind the bookstore. Cruz hissed.
I will not sift she-seers.
Barons made a rattling sound deep in his chest.
You are not filling my store.
What part of quickly and without contention did I fail to make clear? Jada said coolly. Do you have a better idea, Barons? Is Chester's protected against the Shisadu? If so, take the She-Seers there. The book has obviously been here, and may still be. We must transport my women to safety.
Who put her in charge?
Fade growled at Barons.
Did you agree to this?
I'm not in charge, Jada said evenly. Their egos required delicate handling. I'm doing damage control. We're all in charge. The issue at hand happens to be the lives of my women. Barons narrowed his eyes and stared at her a long moment in silence. Then he inclined his dark head.
You heard what Jada said. Move the She-Seers. But to Chester's. Not my bookstore. When she has informed her women of the truce,
Cruz stipulated.
One of them has the spear. Only when she no longer does will I move them.
I'll tell Enyo you're off limits, Jada said. She'll obey me.
I place no faith in the faith you place in humans, human. Reclaim the spear. Fade.
Barons growled.
Guard Cruz until Jada and I have prepared the She-Seers.
He turned and stalked off toward the entrance of the Abbey. Jada loped to catch up. Thank you for supporting me. Focusing on the Abbey entry, she swiftly accessed the slipstream, only to be yanked violently back down by Barons.
I don't,
he snarled.
Like everyone else's, your objectives are emotional, flawed, and in the wrong fucking order.
She snatched her arm from his steely grip. My objectives are not...
Save the She-Seers,
he mocked.
If we pull out, we leave the Abbey grounds unprotected. You must be willing to sacrifice anything, no matter how it affects you emotionally, to gain a single thing. The four stones that can contain the She-Sadu. They're in the rubble somewhere, aren't they?
She nodded. Tightly.
Tell me where, and don't bloody point because Cruz is standing right behind us.
I stored them in a safe in the sitting room, off the Dragon Lady's library. She told him the location as best she could, without gesturing in the direction of the rubble to search.
Only once we have them do we yield this place and attend the needs of the weaker. To be a protector, you can't think like a protector. You must always think like a conqueror first. It costs blood and soul.
Jada muttered a string of curses. He was right. The priority was the stones, and she'd not given one thought to them. They were the only hope they had of containing the Shisadu and buying time to figure out how to get Mac back. Yet the first thing on her mind had been the survival of others. Perhaps the book had come here to kill the princes, but most likely it had come to claim the only thing capable of containing it, yet had been unable to resist mowing down its enemies along the way. Its delay was their advantage. Is Chester secure?
Enough. Parts. Occupy crews relocating the women. I'll search for the stones and return to Dublin when I have them. Mention nothing of this to the fairy.
And if you run into Mac? He flashed her a savage smile.
I intend to.
Barons, you don't know what she's like. You weren't in the warehouse. You didn't feel what she's become.
I'll take my chances.
But...
Enough. Go. Now.
Shaking her head, she turned to leave. He called after her.
Cruz doesn't know the stones are here, and is interested only in securing his own safety and protection, at the moment. What the book did to him screwed with his head, but it will clear. Keep him distracted. Act fast, and stay alert. The dogs of war don't negotiate. They deceive, awaiting a more prime opportunity to attack. If he thought he could seize all four stones, he would. They could contain him, too. He'll covet them every bit as much as the book does.
Jada nodded grimly and kicked up into the slipstream. Then he was there beside her, in her sacred place. She could feel him near, though she saw nothing but a starry tunnel. She was chafed to realize it was because he was moving slightly faster than her. She couldn't help herself. Barons, you've got to teach me how to do that. His words buzzed softly and seemed to come from a distance.
Help me get Mac back and fix our world. And if Riordan won't, I will.
Chills kissed her skin, because Barons was a man of his word. And once, she'd have considered chewing her own hand off to be able to move as fast as right. Them.
Last night was a bitch, kid, but you pulled it together. Riordan was right. You've become one hell of a woman.
Somehow, it didn't irritate her that he'd called her kid. It was as if his words had been a nod to both Danny and Jada, and it felt good. Danny was her foundation. Jada was her fortress. Both were her. Both essential. Then, Barons was gone. 11. Out of sight of God. Humans are worthless. Weak. As is their flesh. Killing Joe was satisfying, but she tastes unpleasant, and eating her provides no nourishment. My energy is flagging. The single time I'd seized control of Michaela's body in the past, I'd ridden it hard for hours. But my tenuous hold had grown progressively weaker. For no reason I'd been able to discern, I lost control of the vessel, and it slumped to the pavement. Michaela had perceived the passage of time as a complete blackout. I was cognizant for the entire duration. In control one moment, controlled the next. Still... From that day, my supremacy was assured. Losing dominance of her body to me had frayed the threads of her already damaged confidence. I'd ceased my efforts to conquer and begun to seduce, silently lending my power to fuel her wishes, turning her invisible, using my darkest magic to bring her dead sister, Alina, back to life, nudging here and there to undermine... Creating sinkholes, poisoning the soil, sowing doubts in the garden of her mind. Never let anyone else into your garden. We hoe out the crops and seed in weeds, all the while telling you how beautiful our weeds are, that, in fact, they're not weeds at all, and you're so lucky to have them, until you're no longer certain what a weed even is. Imbeciles. Wretches. That's how we win. Don't turn over the fucking keys to your kingdom, then cry foul play when you get evicted. Once you let us confuse you with enough lies that you no longer know your truth, we own your reality. And you gave it to us. As I push to my feet, I stumble and go back down. Snarling, I shove my hair from my face and rest a moment more, considering my next move. My muscles burn from exertion. Pain is a new sensation, distracting, infuriating. It's an insult that I was born so flawed. My jaws hurt from tearing flesh, and there's a painful bone splinter lodged in my gums. I pick it out with the tip of one of my knives. I came to the Abbey to accomplish 3 goals: kill Christian, kill Cruz, and find the stones. Events have not unfolded as I'd intended. The unseelie flesh I ate isn't fueling me as it did Michaela. I'm burning through it too fast and require more. It doesn't help that my body hasn't slept in over a day. The loss of my spear grandly fucked my plans. By this hour, both princes should have been dead. I expand my awareness, seeking the stones, which Michaela was certain were somewhere in the Abbey. I sense nothing. Might they have been moved? I assess possibilities and encounter an obstacle of my own making. In my quest for strength, I ate unseelie, which mutes Michaela's ability to sense fey objects of power. Limits! Yet more limits to remember! I must dally until it wears off, or go to ground, rest, then gather my army, seize the stones, destroy them, and move to the next phase of my plans. I consider summoning an army of unseelie, resuming the battle on the Abbey grounds while still more of them search the ruins for me, but Michaela would call the stones my kryptonite, and I'll not unearth them into untrusted hands. Might I simply forget them? It occurs to me that 2 out of 3 aren't bad. The cocoons I've put the princes in, while not as much fun as killing them will be, are sufficient. Paramount to my plans is the spear. I refine my goals, making it my priority. I push myself up from the bloody remains of Joe, in which I squat, becoming aware of eyes on me. I can feel them. Someone is watching me. Is it my clever, clever enemy? How is someone anticipating me? There is no one with my clarity, my focus, my resolve. I stand motionless, curious to know the face of my foe. Jericho Barons steps from behind a tumbled wall. For a moment I stare, consumed by jealousy. I had to be born a fucking woman in a world where men are physically superior. Christian, Cruz, now Barons. He exudes ferocity, power, hunger. His presence saturates the air with palpable, electrifying energy. Even the Fae fear him. Shades slink away when he passes. He has killed Fae royals, sifters. His vessel is wide-shouldered, big-boned, muscled and powerful as a lion. Undestroyable. I despise him for it.
Mac,
he says roughly, and I know what he sees. His precious little Mac, all blonde and bouncy, defiled and vile. It doesn't escape me that vile becomes evil, becomes live. More proof my supremacy was destined. Drenched in blood, hair matted with it, face crimson, black feathers stuck to the congealed mass, bits of Joe's brains on his pretty girl's hands, under her nails. He sweeps the remains with a dark gaze, trying to identify them. Impossible. As her head is a glistening bloody omelet, garnished with the broken eggshells of her skull. Joe, I tell him, enjoying the moment. I ate her. Savage enough for you yet, Barons?
Mac was savage enough for me as she was.
She was weak. Is. Hate the bitch. Stupid, guilt-ridden cunt.
Young.
He corrects.
Sometimes the young surprise you.
Young is boring. She never understood you. I do. Were he to doff his circumscribing ethics, we might raise galaxies together. I would fuck him. Discover what my body has to offer me in the way of pleasure. Lust speaks its hungry native tongue when I look at him. Demanding satiety. There will be time for that. Later.
Bullshit. She knows me. You don't.
I know you far better than Michaela did. Steeped in all that grand insecurity. She couldn't make up her mind about shit. That's why it was so easy for me to make it up for her.
She's getting there. I'm a patient man.
Your love for her is your greatest weakness. Pity. You could have been so much more. He could have been like me. His monster demands he be like me. He muzzles the finest part of himself. Michaela may pretend she doesn't know what he eats, but we do. We know what he is. We just don't talk about it.
What do you want?
He demands. I have what I want. You have nothing to offer me.
Try me. Bargain. Let me find you another body.
Do you have one in mind? I say, interested. I never underestimate my prey. Perhaps he knows something Michaela and I don't.
Mine.
He says flatly. I'm silenced by the unexpected offer. I assess his splendid body from head to toe, pondering how delicious his black-skinned beast would be to ride. Possessing him, I would gain access to all his secrets, his enviable powers. I'd be able to kill Fae without needing spear or sword. I'd acquire millennia of druidry and skills in the black arts. He would go so far to save her, yield his exquisite existence for an illusion. Called love. The fool is more deluded than I believed. Desire, greed, lust to possess his powerful, changeable, impervious skin saturate my every cell. If I were able to complete transference to his body, and my enormity burned him up like all the others, I'd come back again and again, forever. I'd only have to maintain my hold on my form through the dying and rebirth, and I've held my form against far more formidable foes. The Unseelie King himself tried to strip me out of the corporeal book he'd made once he realized what he'd done. And failed. Perhaps, at the moment of his dying, I might evict the tatters of his sentience. He doesn't deserve the vessel he inhabits. My will is supreme. No other has my focus, my hunger. He is up to some trick, or he would never offer. Barons is no sacrificial lamb. Besides, there is another more certain way. I will fuck him, then kill him, once my goals are attained. You think you stand a better chance against me than she does, because you have a beast within. You think you're stronger. And would take on her battle for her like you always do because she's such a pathetic victim. Your beast, I say silkily, would be a mere mouse in my house. You chain it, hobble it with your fucking morality, even those few shreds you possess.
Try me,
he says, just as silkily.
If you're so certain of that, take my body. Let hers go. Hers is fragile. It can die. You know mine can't. Logic dictates you take mine. If you can.
He taunts.
Ah, but you're not sure you can, are you?
Rage floods me. He's the bird in the bush. I crave his skin, but am uncertain I could seize it. Michaela's body is all I desire. I've such fun and games planned for it. He deserves to be tortured. He impedes my desires. I make my face go slack, rearrange my features into a soundless shriek. Black eyes, pale to green, then black, then green again. I pretend to be his rainbow girl beneath the gore, frothy, fragile, and fatally flawed. I fall to my knees, clutching my head.
Barons,
I scream.
Help me. Oh, God, help me. I'm in here. Get it out of me. Please, Barons, help me.
I infuse my cry with desperation, knowing he'll hear it in nightmares. I shake myself violently, flood my eyes black again, toss my head back and snarl.
She is beyond your help.
Mac, I'm here. I'm not losing you.
He says roughly.
You've got to fight it. You can do it. Fight.
Rah, rah, fucking cheerleader. All he's missing are fluffy pink pom-poms. It's all I can do not to shake my head in disgust. I make my eyes go green, black, body shuddering, as if I'm weak and fighting for control.
Barons,
I scream.
It hurts. It's killing me. Please, you gotta save me. I don't have much time.
He lunges forward, checks himself, and stops. His pain is my pleasure. You can't defeat me. I let my eyes go full black again. She's mine, and I will never release her. I push myself up and saunter toward him, swaying my hips, jiggling my breasts, a blatant reminder of the potent bond they share. And perhaps can again, my walk suggests. I wet my lips and smile. My body is hot. Parts of it ache in a way that's sinfully delicious. It's an ache, I understand. Lust, greed. Dominate him, chain him, use and abuse him. I have plans for this one. He mutters beneath his breath, and a silvery wall appears in the air between us. I saunter closer, stopping inches from his hastily erected and not nearly fortified enough to keep the likes of me out, druid wall.
The Fae taught the druids, I purr. And not very well. We always withhold information.
I reach for the three lesser amulets I took from Cruz that hang around my neck, enclose them in a fist, and murmur softly, weaving a spell of illusion that will convince Barons to drop his druid wall and become lamb to my slaughter. The druid wall remains. I chant louder, and my amulets glow with blue-black fire. The corners of his mouth lift in a smile, and he says smugly,
The lesser three don't work on me. Only the king's does, and I have that one. Mac doesn't know what I'm capable of. You don't either. You'll learn my limits by discovering their lack.
It offends me that he possesses an amulet that should be mine. Offends me more that yet another thing that should unfold in my favor doesn't. I go motionless, banking the embers of my rage with images of his destruction. I will torture him to the brink of death over and over. I will take him with me, my prisoner, when I leave this world. I will make him beg for death until the black holes I plan to feed so they will grow rapidly out of control devour the earth and trap him as I was. In nothing. Forever. I return his smug smile, thinking about it. His eyes narrow to dark, burning slits.
I'll kill her rather than let you have her. Take my body or come up with another deal you're willing to make. I'll hunt you across the motherfucking galaxies. I'll shred you limb from limb, dice and exorcise you. I won't let her live in hell. You have 3 days. Get out of Mac's body, or die.
Long before 3 days have passed, I will be all I was meant to be and gone, and he won't hunt me long. Once I feed the black holes, he'll either die or be trapped in nothing forever. I consider attacking his druid wall by a different method, but I am as uncertain of the current strength of my body as I am of whether I could seize his. I whirl and dash away from him. I race into the woods behind the abbey where I sequestered my car, as rapidly as my weakening body is capable of moving. He lets me, as I knew he would. He won't harm Michaela's body, not so long as he believes his precious rainbow girl is within reach. Everyone has something they value more than anything else. That's what we see when we look at you, scribbled on your flat, one-dimensional faces. That thing that means everything to you, and without it, you are so easily broken. Fucking keys to your kingdom. 12. Through these fields of destruction, baptisms of fire. Jada. After seeing the She-Seer safely to Chester's, Jada left them settling into the upper-level rooms and hurried back to Baron's books and baubles to address something she should have dealt with earlier. Every minute now, each hour, was vital. They'd wasted the better part of a day sifting women one by one to Riordan's club, sending others ahead by what few cars were at the abbey, and tending to the needs of the injured. Before she'd left the club, she'd lost 4 more She-Seers to wounds too severe to heal. Crushed skulls and lacerated organs were beyond their limited medical abilities. And although Cruz possessed at least some power to heal, he'd claimed to be too taxed by his time in the cocoon to use the ability at the moment. Whether or not that was true was anyone's guess. The ancient prince would resent employing any of his precious power for a mere human, unless there was something significant in it for him. They needed all hands on deck, and Riordan, with his ruthlessness, Machiavellian mind, and knowledge of arcane magic, was crucial. Had he been uninjured today, she suspected he too might have healed some of the women. She had no such ability, and would sacrifice a great deal to learn it. She stood near the mattress, staring down, watching the virtually non-existent rise and fall of his chest through narrowed eyes, hands fisted, accepting that she had a profound aversion to seeing him in pain. Irritated by the matter that had brought her here for the second time in a day, she snapped, "Are you awake?" His head moved slightly beneath the fabric. "You're being illogical, you know. How long will it take you to heal this way? Days? Weeks? I watched you die. You came back as good as new. If you can die, you'd come back whole. Why don't you? Are there limits to how many times you can do it? Like a cat with 9 lives? Or maybe you can only do it during a full moon? What are you anyway? Whatever it is, you're useless in your current condition," she said crossly. He made a strangled sound that might have been laughter, and puffed at the fabric. After a moment, she knelt on the floor and lifted it from his face, bending near.
"Could you not?"
he said, on a labored exhale. She unraveled his comments. "You could die and come back, but because of me, you won't?" He moved his head in a minuscule nod. "Well, that's just insulting. I'm fine. I pulled it together. Won't happen again." She'd slipped. She'd recovered. Shit happened. Life went on. He'd burned himself to a crisp for her, and now was refusing to leave because he was worried about her. "Sorry you had to burn yourself for me." She paused a moment, then grumbled, "Thanks." She absorbed his expression. Though he had no eyebrows and his face was badly burned, he was somehow still managing to look at her like she'd just sprouted 3 heads. She clarified coolly, "I thank people when they deserve it. You just don't usually deserve it. Don't hang around on my account. It's not like you could do anything for me in your current state anyway." He made a choked sound of laughter, terminated it abruptly, then said,
"Tattoo. Sell. Don't use it.
Why not? He'd completed the tramp stamp at her spine and told her if she called IISS, he could locate her anywhere. But according to what she'd learned from Barron's today, the tattoo he'd inked into her skin enabled him to locate her even without her calling him. So why was the phone necessary? Because you're injured.
Take too many of us out of the game. Too dangerous now.
She studied him in the low light, wondering again exactly what calling the contact labeled "I'm in serious shit" on her phone would do, and how many of the nine her using it would impair. Wishing irritably he'd tell her. Obviously it did something more than merely locate her, but confidences weren't his strong suit any more than they were hers. I have two missions, Mac, and saving the world from the black holes, and I'd like to do them in that order, as I suspect saving Mac could help us save the world. I have no intention of doing anything with your cell phone in the meantime. When you die, how quickly can you return? It had been a while before she'd seen him again the last time.
Varies.
But sooner than you'll heal this way.
Yes.
So die. I'll be here when you get back. Bloodshot silver eyes locked with hers. I'll stay in the vicinity. You have my word. You know it's solid. They might not get along, but she respected him and knew he returned the courtesy. His eyes were a dozen shimmering, inscrutable shades of cool silver. She shifted position, impatience making her restless. What are you waiting for?
Not that simple.
Why?
Can't move. How? Die.
She got a sinking feeling in her gut. Do you always come back? This isn't something that doesn't work sometimes. It's a sure thing, right? He gave another of those nearly imperceptible nods. She exhaled explosively. As a teen, she used to brag about one day taking down the mighty Riordan. But the day she thought she'd killed him by freeing the Crimson Hag had been one of the more miserable days of her life. Figures you'd make me do the dirty work, she said irritably. His eyes crinkled, and his lips pulled into a grimace of a smile. Are you laughing at me?
Thought you'd get kicks. Killing me. Old insults could get Barron's. Hate that fuck doing it. Enjoys it too much.
How do you suggest I do it? She said tightly.
Sword. Gut. Like hag.
She glanced around the room, as if a more acceptable alternative might pop out of a corner, or from behind the desk, or manifest in the mirror. One less brutal, bloody, and personal. Can't I just give you an overdose of something?
Poisons don't work. Chop. Head.
Oh, you really suck, she hissed.
Technicalities. You're right. Logical. I die.
She dropped her head in her hands and rubbed her eyes. Killing came naturally to her. She could be ruthless, lethal and without mercy, and considered it a strength. But Riordan mattered to her. She'd made peace with that silver side. She liked knowing he was out there in the world, alive, doing Riordan things, no matter how much some of those Riordan things aggravated her. For the first year, she told herself stories while wandering worlds about the many interesting, irritating things he was probably doing in her absence. Top on that list, hunting for her, having all kinds of adventures along the way. Those stories had always ended with him finding her. They'd swap tall tales and kick ass together all the way back to Dublin. She found the idea of killing him, even though his death would be temporary, abhorrent. She raised her head, eyes blazing with emotion. She didn't think he could go any more still, but he managed to, eyes narrowed, searching her face. She hated that anything mattered to her. Yet last night, all the grief and loss she'd been repressing had escaped. Once triggered, everything that had ever triggered her had a tendency to explode up from the floor of an ocean of unaddressed injury.